I pay more than what I have to for the air check. So it says free air check. Got my air checked. I walked out eventually, though, with four new tires, $500-$600. And then we went on our trip. And then right like in the middle of the trip, that light came on again. Something's wrong with your tires. Yeah? Let's just go off the cliff now. But no, normally that's not the case. Normally that's not the case. People who know me, they know I get very unlucky sometimes. Shahada on one side.
More than what I have to for
the what's on the other check. Side? Freedom, victory.
So it says free air check.
A longer life, this, that. All of that, just put it in one box and label that box. Never
got my air check. I walked out eventually, though, with four new tires. $500-$600.
This is what the imam is telling them.
And the normally that's not the case.
So it shows that the imam might not have been too happy either with some of the Bani Hashim, some of them. I don't want to mention other names because those are also controversial. Some ulama, there's differences of opinion. But one of them, for example, that ulama are discussing is the husband of Lady Zainab. Why didn't he go? Abdullah bin Ja'far, why didn't he go? And others, and others. The test is for everybody, brothers and sisters. Recite the salawat. Okay, moving on. A letter to the people of Basra now. The imam, sometimes we don't know this, the imam wrote letters to different people of different places. It wasn't just one letter to Kufa. He wrote letters to different places, sent messengers around to get the message across. One of them is someone by the name of Sulaiman. Sulaiman, and they say different things about him. Some say he was a servant of the imam. He sends him to Basra. To Basra with a letter to the noble people of Basra, the noblemen, the elites, the ones whom everyone looks up to. The letter was given to this person. He goes. Now, let me just tell you this before I read the letter. And I want you to understand how good the evil enemies of Islam work, how hard they work, and then how lazy people like me are. Ubaydullah bin Ziyad was the governor of Basra. A letter comes from Yazid to Ubaydullah that you better rush and go to Kufa. Why? Because someone by the name of Muslim ibn Aqil is in Kufa. He is leading a revolution there, and he's taking bay'ah from people, and there's this incompetent ruler or governor there by the name of Nu'man bin Bashir. He's not taking care of business. He's not apprehending Muslim. He's telling the people, as long as you're not drawing your swords against me, I'm not going to fight you. And Muslim's just walking around, Muslim ibn Aqil is just walking around getting bay'ah from everybody, and they're ready for Husayn ibn Ali to come so that he becomes their leader. Go, O Ubaydullah, go to Kufa and take care of business. Now, right here I have to say, this Nu'man bin Bashir, he wasn't incompetent. Pay attention to this point. They thought he's incompetent. Nu'man bin Bashir was one of the lovers, buddies, best friends forever of Muawiyah. Nu'man bin Bashir, the governor of Kufa, when Muslim ibn Aqil came, I'm going slow so you can follow. I know there are names that are said in history that you might get confused on. This guy, he is one of the Ansar, Sahaba. Ansar. He has the medal of honor of being the first one to be born when the Prophet entered Medina from Mecca, when he migrated to Medina. By the way, this isn't too much of a medal of honor. It's not something that he did, you know? I mean, that's the thing. Like, sometimes we these are medals of honor for some individuals. He had nothing to do with that. Or like they call Muawiyah the uncle of the Mu'mineen. Well, it wasn't up to him that his sister became the wife of the Prophet, or that he was born in a family that one of the girls of that family became the wife of the Prophet later. And since she was the wife of the Prophet and she is the mother of the believers, so her brother is going to be the uncle of the believers. These things aren't in their hands. These aren't real medals of honor. These aren't real merits. But anyway, when you look up this person by the name of Nu'man bin Bashir, one of the first thing they say, he was the one that was born first when the Prophet came to Medina. Wow, man, this guy is good. He timed it right. So he's one of the two Ansar. To be one of the Ansar is an honor. One of those companions of the Prophet who let the Meccans come and live with them in Medina. He's one of the Ansar. He's one of the Medinans. He's from Medina. But now, everything we said so far about the good stuff, he did some things that destroys all of it in the Shia school of thought's opinion. What did he do? He was one of only two Ansar to be on Muawiyah's side in the Battle of Siffin. You look at the roster of Muawiyah, right? It's all losers when it comes to like great figures. When you look at the roster of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib in the Battle of Siffin, you see stars, man. Superstars. It's an all-star team right here. They're the best, like shining names. But this guy, he's one of the few that might be somebody because he's one of the Ansar, he's on that side. There's Nu'man bin Bashir. He was like this with Muawiyah. So let's not call him incompetent. Why? Because he had learned from Muawiyah that you don't mess with Husayn. He was just continuing the policies of Muawiyah. And Muawiyah has just died. So this guy that's in Kufa, he's looking, Muawiyah just died. Let's continue his policies, right? So don't tell me that he was incompetent. As a matter of fact, he had learned very nicely from his friend and master Muawiyah that you don't mess with Imam Hussein. So if Muslim is here, I'm not going to draw my sword. But now Yazid has taken over. He doesn't think about these things. His father told him not to mess with Hussein, but he still did. So of course he's going to send a letter to Basra, to the bloodthirsty Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, who is the governor of Basra, so that he goes to Kufa and takes care of business. All right. Point I want to make here is, look at how hardworking Ubaydullah is. Once he gets this letter, he's like, get ready, we're going now. But he does stay behind for one day, for a reason. Why? He makes sure that he arrests this Suleiman who brought this letter, and makes sure he's executed, and then he goes. He's like, okay, we killed one of the messengers of Hussein here, let's go to Kufa and kill the other messenger now, Muslim ibn Aqil. That's what he does. But it's interesting when you read this part of history how he did not hesitate. They even say there were some Shia in his ranks that were kind of like spies for the Imams. And when they found out that he's going and he was taking them with him, they would throw themselves on the ground, try to come up with excuses to put off this trip to Kufa. He said, I'm not going to look at, I don't care what anyone's doing, I'm going to Kufa. They weren't able to stop him, he went. And he made it to Kufa. Alright, this is the letter that Imam Hussein has given to Suleiman. There's something that in it we want to discuss. A few points that we want to discuss in it. He says, verily Allah chose Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. From amongst his creation and honored him with prophethood and selected him for his message. Then he took the Prophet back to himself. In other words, the Prophet passed away. While he had fulfilled his duty and delivered the message he was sent with, we the Ahlul Bayt are the most qualified regarding that message he was sent with. It's interesting how Imam Hussein starts changing the wording of his messages. You'll see as we go on. Now he's talking about himself being the most qualified. Him and the message of the Prophet, not just the fact that he is Ahlul Bayt, not just the fact that he's one of the five members of the cloak, none of that. Now he's actually talking about his own qualifications a little in these letters. We the Ahlul Bayt are the most qualified regarding that message, and the successors and inheritors of that message. It's a big statement. And the most suitable to be in his place from all people. But others were chosen over us for that. So we conceded. We let that go. Others were chosen in Saqifah. We let that go. And didn't wish for division. And preferred the safeguarding of the Muslims and Islam. We're going to talk a little bit here. All while we knew this right belongs to us and not to those who have taken it. The letter goes on. I'm going to get to that part later. Let's talk a little bit. What does Imam Hussein say here? He says, we didn't wish for division and preferred the safeguarding of the Muslims and Islam, although this right belonged to us, but this is what we preferred. That's wisdom. You weigh things out and you take the side of that which has more advantages. Very simple. But some people don't do that anymore. Emotions, too much. Emotions are God-given. They are sacred. Emotions, anger even, is something that's God-given. If used in the right place, it can do wonders. But if it's not used in the right place, it can cause major problems as well. Here the Imam is talking about wisdom. You know where else one of the Imams talks about this? Ali ibn Abi Talib, he talks about this in Nahj al-Balagha, in khutbah, his famous khutbah. The khutbah where it's called Shaqshaqiyya, where he, it's shikshikiyah, if you want to translate it, it'll be the khutbah of venting. The Imam is venting in that khutbah, talking about what happened to his khilafah and so on. There's one part though that's very important. We should write this and just like put it in front of us. He says, then I began to think. Once they took my right and I wasn't khalifa anymore, then I began to think. Okay, so number one, people, brothers, sisters, we have to think a little bit. Yeah? Just can't just like do things ad hoc. No. Think. Then I began to think whether I should assault and fight for my right or endure calmly the blinding darkness of tribulations wherein the grown are made feeble. These tribulations are so bad and so heavy that someone who is grown up becomes old and frail and feeble because of that pressure. Imam Ali is under that much pressure. And the young grow old in. And if you're young, you grow old under that pressure. And the true believer acts under strain till he meets Allah on his death. It's so much pressure that you're going to be living under that pressure, but eventually you go and meet your Lord apparently. I found, this is the part I want you to hear. I found that endurance. So I thought, waited out. I found that endurance from there on was wiser. Wiser. Wisdom. Now you tell me, brothers and sisters, if our ulama, 50, 60 years they've spent on the hadith, all of the hadith of the a'immah, and they're pious individuals, and they want the best for Islam, if they have a priority list, should we not adopt that as our own priority list? Because they have the qualifications for it. When I say ulama, I'm not talking about myself. No. When I say ulama, I'm talking about the ones who have spent their lives in the sources. And we know that they're trustworthy. We know that they're pious. We know they have the best intentions. The Imam here says wiser. Now some people come out and they say, I don't care what happens. I'm going to say this, I'm going to do that. While the Imam is saying wiser. So I adopted patience, although there was pricking in the eye. Yeah, in Iran, back then when I was younger, I was driving motorcycle a lot because I didn't have a car. One time I was driving this motorcycle, a little like bit, I don't know what it was, went into my eye, right? And it was so bad, God protected me, I didn't crash. Because once that went in, I lost control of everything. I just wanted to get that out of my eye. I might not have been here right now. No helmet either. Very bad. So, the Imam says it's like that. It's like a thorn in the eye. That's how it was for me. For 25 years, think about it, a thorn is in your eye. This is not exaggeration. This is not metaphorical. This might be an understatement, as a matter of fact. Fatwa al-Zahra's tragedy was enough for him. But he sees Islam going through like sand, going through your fingers. Pricking in the eye and suffocation in the throat. I don't know how many of you this has happened to. When something gets stuck in your throat, you don't know what to do anymore. You reach for anything. You slam yourself against the wall. You want to get that out because you need oxygen. He says, that's how it was for me for 25 years. So if it's that hard, Ya Ali, just do, like, you know, mess things up. Fight, assault. He says, no, wisdom dictated something else. This is one of the tests, brothers and sisters. These are the tests that I'm talking about that are new. That in every era it's going to be a different test. We have to understand what wisdom dictates in scenarios. And for that, either I'm an expert or I go to my experts, inshallah. Imam Ali is looking at the bigger picture. Islam itself is in danger. I'm going to keep quiet. Look at this hadith now. That Imam al-Sadiq, he narrates. He says, قال لما قدم علي بن الحسين وقد قتل الحسين بن علي استقبله. That when Imam Hussein was killed, Imam al-Sajjad returned. He came. استقبله إبراهيم بن طلحة بن عبيد الله. A person by the name of Ibrahim comes and receives the Imam and tells him, وقال يا علي ابن الحسين. O Ali ibn al-Hussein, من غلبة. Who won this whole battle now? You've been through all of that which you were through. I don't know if he meant something by saying this, if he meant something bad or not. I don't know. I don't think so. But like, O Ali, O Zain al-Abidin, You went through all of this, and eventually it's as if you didn't really, you came back without Hussein. What kind of gain is there? You went with Hussein, you came back without Hussein. Is there a victory? Who won here? It seems as if he might be implying that, hey, you did this, but you didn't come back victorious. I want to give us an example of the bigger picture that our imams had in mind. What did the Imam Sajjad say? It says, Imam Sajjad, who was, his head was covered, and he was in the mahmil on the camel, he said, إِذَا أَرَدْتَ أَن تَعْلَمَ مَنْ غَلَبَ. This is so beautiful. If you want to know who won the battle, who was victorious out of all of this, فَأَذِنْ ثُمَّ أَقِمْ. Say adhan and then say iqama. And the hadith ends. In other words, what is said in adhan and iqama? Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah is said. Tawheed. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah is said. Nubuwa. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. Salat, which is the amud al-din and the pillar of Islam, is upheld. Just the fact that you can say adhan and iqama and it hasn't been lost and forgotten, that itself, all of this shows who the victory was for. And it shows us what the fight was for. The fight was for Islam. This is the bigger picture. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he says this. Imam Hussein says this in his letter to Basra. And Imam Sajjad is saying this. They're all saying the same thing. Islam. Preserving Islam. Preserving Islam. So should we not be after preserving Islam? It doesn't say tashayyu. Islam. Tawheed, Nubuwa, Ma'ad. These are usul al-din. Imamah is, of course, without imamah, we believe that it doesn't count for a person who knows that imamah has to be adopted. But some people don't know about imamah. We can't necessarily say they're outside of the religion now. I'm not saying this. Our greatest ulama are saying this. If anyone wants sources, bismillah, come, I'll show you later. From Allama Tabatabai all the way to ones who are still alive today. They say this straight up. A person who doesn't know the true path, but tries their best and identifies the wrong path as the right path, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go to hell. Allama Tabatabai says this. I'm not saying this. So go find him. His address, buried in the haram of Imam Habibi Ma'asuma in Qum. Find him there. Islam has to be preserved. Islam apparently means something very broad here. Alright. The bigger picture. Now, let's go back to the letter of Basra. So, just so we're not lost, the letter of Basra, the Imam mentions how the right was taken from them, but they kept quiet. Imam Hussein said that. I gave you an example of Amir al-Mu'mineen saying the same thing in Nahj al-Balagha. I gave you a hadith about from Imam Sajjad showing us what the bigger picture was that they had in mind. Aqim, adhin thumma aqim. Going back to the letter now, the letter to the people of Basra. I have sent to you my messenger with this letter, and I am calling you to the book of God and the sunnah of his prophet. For verily the sunnah has been killed, and bid'ah has been given life. Therefore, if you heed what I am telling you, I shall guide you to the right path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. If you follow me, I guide you to the right path. It's interesting that the Imam is saying this now. Before I go on to one conclusion I want to draw from the end of the letter. This letter, brothers and sisters, does it not apply to the time of Muawiyah too? Everything the Imam says in this letter, there's no mention of Yazid. He says the Sunnah has been killed, Bid'ah has taken place, our right was taken, we're more qualified, things like that. Do I see anywhere anything in this letter that applies to after Muawiyah's time? No, it applies to Muawiyah's time too. So it's justified to ask Imam Hussein, oh Imam Hussein, why are you writing this letter now? Why didn't you do this before, during Muawiyah's time? But for 10 years you never wrote such a letter. What's the answer? We just said the answer. The answer is the bigger picture. In Muawiyah's time, they wouldn't have been able to secure the bigger picture. Wisdom, insight. Yeah, a person who wants to have proper wisdom and proper insight though, they have to be Ahlul Taqwa. In tattaqullah yaj'al lakum furqana. I'd said this the other night. If you are a pious individual who is obedient to Allah, Allah gives you the measuring stick to tell right from wrong, or else things will be blurred for you. to the extent that Marwan bin Hakam tells Imam Hussein, give bay'ah to Yazid, it's better for your deen and dunya. So you can't be like, oh, I want to be wise, I want to have that insight, I want to be on the right side. You, yeah, it's luck, it's chance. If you don't have taqwa throughout your life, if you haven't been lifting those little weights, when the time comes, maybe you'll be able to lift the heavier weight, but we're not sure. So from now it starts, brothers and sisters. So when I say Labbaik Ya Hussein, what does it mean? Labbaik Ya Hussein means, oh Hussein, if you call me, I'm there for you. For that to happen though, I have to live a life of piety. And piety doesn't mean I come to center and I pray. Ramadan time I fast, Majlis of Imam Hussein I come and go. Although these are accepted by Allah, of course. But Imam Sahib Azam will come back to a people who are solid. Solid iman comes through practice every day, day in and day out. No compromise. I messed up. You're telling me I have to be masoom. No. You mess up, get back on your feet like a man or like a woman. Get up. Yeah? Some people have this argument. We have it in Farsi. It's a saying in Farsi that when 1 inch of like water crosses your head, you're going to drown anyway. So it doesn't matter if 10 feet of water are on your head. Or like 1 inch of water crosses your head, right? So when you mess up, just let go. That's shaitan telling you to do that. Who says let go? One sin doesn't equal an inch of water over my head and I'm going to drown. So let me just go all out. These things, I don't know. Allah has given us aql. We should understand. But some people might look at things like this. Na'udhu billah. Wisdom comes, all the good stuff comes if we do what we're supposed to do. And that is be obedient servants of Allah throughout the day for the rest of our life. Not salat only and fasting. When my mom or dad say something, I get angry. You're not allowed to say anything that's going to hurt them. Your wife says something, your husband says something, you get angry, you leave that scene. If you say something abusive, you committed a sin. So she got on your nerves here, and she is going to cost you your akhirah too. You know, let them ruin one side, not both. Same thing with husbands, right? Same thing with husbands. Don't laugh, guys. I'm talking to you too. Yeah, don't let them ruin both sides. One side at least. I know what you guys are all about, because I'm one of you. So, my daughter, my son, all of these things, there's rulings here. There's wajib and haram here. Those are the harder ones, because when you're in the center, you have this good feeling. You have this spiritual high, you know? But when you're home, and home is home, I'm seeing this person every day. It's normal. So I feel like I haven't accomplished anything if I exhibit patience there. As a matter of fact, that's where it counts. That's where the magic happens. The biggest, best akhlaq lesson is in the home. And I want to have wisdom and insight so that I can identify the Hussein of my time and the Muslim Aqil of my time. I'm talking to myself too. Alright, but the important point that I wanted to point out here is that in the end the Imam says, I shall guide you to the right path, follow me. Before, he wasn't using this wording. So personally, I haven't really come to a conclusion myself even on this, that what was the exact goal? How did it work exactly? Was it something that slowly developed into Ashura? Of course, we all know Ashura was going to take place. This was the only option and all of that. True. But historically, is it something that someone would have in mind from the beginning that I want Karbala to happen? Or no? You're going to let it unfold and develop. First, the Imam begins his journey with what? Only emphasizing that I'm not going to give bi'ah to Yazid. That's all he keeps saying. Then he leaves. And he says, I want to fix the ummah of my grandfather because things are going wrong. I'm doing Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahi an al-Munkar. Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahi an al-Munkar are big furu'ud-deen, big branches of the religion. They're very important. But then it evolves again. He takes it a notch higher as well. What does he say? Here, he says, not only am I not going to give bay'ah to Yazid, not only I'm going to try to fix the ummah of my father, but I also want to be established as, I want, because Allah wants, to be established as and seen as the Islamic authority. I'm the one you come to for guidance, to find the right path. Not political leader yet. I'm the one that you come to for to know what the right path is even. You see how He's trying to hit so many targets with one stone. This is what's going on apparently. You see that it's just getting better and better, and it's developing more and more. Recite a salawat. Which brings us to his response to the letter of the Kufans. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Min al-Husayn ibn Ali. إلى الملأ من المسلمين والمؤمنين وقد فهمت كل الذي اختصصتم وذكرتم وإني باعث إليكم أخي وابن عمي وثقتي من أهل بيتي فإن كتب إلي أنه قد اجتمع رأي ملائكم all the way till فلعمري ما الإمام إلا الحاكم بالكتاب القائم بالقسط الدائن بدين الحق الحابس نفسه على ذات الله والسلام. And the Kufans, they find out that, oh, Imam Hussein doesn't have a place, and he's kind of wandering the lands of Hijaz. They say, let's have him come. We don't have a leader. Oh, Hussein, come be our leader. We need a leader. Muawiyah is dead. And we're revolting against the governor of Kufa, Nu'man bin Bashir, the guy that some people thought was incompetent, but he knew what he was doing. We're revolting against him and we're not cooperating with him at all. Look at that. Everything is ready for you to come and take over. What does the Imam say in response to these letters? He says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. From Al-Husayn ibn Ali to the nobles of the believers and the Muslims. He says, Hani and Sa'id, two of the people that they had sent from Kufa, have brought me your letters. They are the last two of your messengers who have come to me. So apparently different messengers were coming. They were coming, trickling in, bringing messages. So up to 12,000 letters, some say, had reached the Imam, or maybe even 18,000 from the people of Kufa, that we're ready for you, please come. They've brought me your letters, they are the last of your two messengers. I have understood everything which you have described and mentioned. The main statement of your great nobleman is this: there is no Imam over us, therefore come. Through you, may God unite us under truth and guidance. This is what you guys are telling me. This is what I understand from all the letters that have come. These are the common grounds that I find in your correspondence with me. And then he goes on. He says, I'm sending you my brother Muslim Al-Aqil, who is my cousin and my trustworthy representative from my household. If he writes to me that the opinions of your leaders and the men of wisdom and merit among you is the same, if he goes and he checks it out and he verifies that it is the case that you guys really want me to come the way you have described to me in your letters, I will come to you speedily, inshallah. And we wish, Muslim Aqil wished that his letter had reached the Imam, that don't come after what they did, after how they betrayed him. But the Imam is now rushing towards Kufa once this letter he sends it with Muslim. And Muslim responds to him. He says, I will come to use God speedily, inshallah, for by my life, he makes a general statement here that should be echoed throughout time and history. For by my life, he swears by his own life, the Imam is none except the one who judges by the book of Allah, the one who upholds justice, one who professes the religion of truth, and one who dedicates himself to the essence of Allah, to Allah, and is an obedient servant of Allah. For him, everything is Allah that's important. His priority is God. Now here in this general statement, what do we see? We see a fourth point. One, no bay'ah with Yazid, we already covered that. Two, islahu ummati jaddi, I want to fix the religion of my father, the ummah of my grandfather. We saw that. Number three was, I want you to understand that you come to me for guidance. Sometimes you have a person that you go to for guidance and you have a political leader. Number four, here in this letter, he's talking about an imam now. Not imam in the Shia school necessarily, no. Imam meaning the person who leads the ummah. In other words, the khalifa of the Muslimin. Now he's talking about this. He wants to be their political leader as well. See how it just developed slowly, slowly to this. Now some might ask, well, isn't he an imam already? Doesn't he? He is an imam for the Shia, but not for everybody. He's not leading. Another person might ask, well, but he knows that the Kufans are going to betray him. Why is he still going to Kufa then? Brothers and sisters, let me just say this in a nutshell. The knowledge of an imam is a mystery. Really it is. I've heard ulama say this myself, that the ilm al-imam, we don't have enough work that has been done regarding it. Going to our sources and being able to understand what this imam, the knowledge of an imam is. If you're going to ask the question, why did he go to Kufa if he knew this was going to happen? Then the same question holds for all of our other imams. Why did they go towards the poison that was given to them, for example? Why did Imam Ali go to the mihrab that night? The 19th of Ramadan. The night of the 19th. Why? If he knows, you know, that this question, if someone's going to pose it here, they have to answer it for everybody, not just there, not just here with the Kufa. Some people ask that question. But even, let's just say, that he knows 100% that this is going to happen to him in Kufa. They're going to betray him. Brothers and sisters, let's look at it. Let's think about it a little bit. What if 18,000 letters come? That's not a small number. 18,000 letters come. And then Imam Hussein says, no, I'm not going to come. And then he's killed later somewhere else. What are some people going to say? This is the ummah of the Prophet, unfortunately. They wait for the smallest opportunity to question something, unfortunately. And the imams have to tell us, you better weep for Imam Hussein to keep it alive. Or else even Imam Hussein's message and memory will be lost. Some will say, oh, he went to Karbala and he got sick and he died. Yeah, we might laugh at that now. But we don't understand what the imams did to preserve Islam through Imam Hussein. Think about it. Imam Hussein says, no, 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 I know you'll betray me. Or there's a chance you'll betray me. So 18,000 letters, just throw them away. I'm not going to listen to any of them. That's not what a leader does. That's not what a leader does. That's why he sends his most trustworthy individual, Muslim bin Aqil, to go check it out. Let's just say he knew. He's going to have to live the way normal people live. That's how all of our imams did it. So many stories of how the imams, they say we can do a lot of things. Or they show that they can do a lot of things, but they live the way the people live. And the cause and effect that governs us, governs them too. On Ashura, the swords were cutting. The spears were piercing. Cause and effect is so important that Allah is not even going to get in the way when you're trying to destroy the Kaaba with catapults. They set the Kaaba ablaze. They destroyed it. Hajjaj bin Yusuf, he came and he did that. Imam Hussein's shrine was destroyed many times. It's not like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends lightning all the time. Yes, in specific cases, Allah will intervene. For example, in the story of Suratul Fil, if the Kaaba was destroyed there, it would have been different. Allah got in the way of it. Other than that, cause and effect, if Allah, and I told some of the brothers and sisters this today in class, if Allah is going to intervene every time, why did He even bring us here in the first place? There's no point. Why bring us here if He's going to intervene every time? The Imam, same thing. They're going to go by the cause and effect. Alright, 18,000 letters have come. If I don't go, throughout history they'll say, yeah, yo, oh Shia, you're lamenting and mourning. But you know, if he had gone, things would have been different. If he had gone, he would have been victorious. If he had gone, he would have 20,000 people on his side. They would have destroyed, and Islam would be saved till today. But now there's all bloodshed because of Imam Hussein. Subhanallah, look at this. I just thought of this now. Alhamdulillah. Think about it. The blame will go on Imam Hussein. Why? Because Ali ibn Abi Talib wanted to change things back to normal. He couldn't. Imam al-Hassan didn't get a chance. The last person, as I said two nights ago, is Imam Hussein of the five members of the cloak. If he's not going to do it, no one's going to do it. He should have gone to Kufa and people should have given him bay'ah, because then they would have fought Bani Umayyah and destroyed them, and Islam would have been preserved, and all of this bloodshed between and sectarianism that we have till today wouldn't have happened. Oh Imam Hussein, we love you so much, they might say like this. Oh Imam Hussein, we love you so much, but we wish you had made the right decision. This is how it is. The imams, they have to do things in a certain way sometimes because of the circumstances. Recite a salawat. Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah. We sometimes forget, brothers and sisters, and it's not our fault that we forget, that Lady Zainab, she had two sons that she lost in Karbala. Look at how much love Lady Zainab has, that till today she won't Sometimes we forget that there was a big sacrifice that she made with her two sons. But the love of Zainab for Hussein is so great, it doesn't let us sometimes remember other things. And it hurts sometimes. Oh, Lady Zainab, please let us understand your grief. Understand how much you went, what you went through. Subhanallah, some of these, in Farsi we call them Ahl al-Dil, the ones who are spiritual and have reached certain levels of spirituality, they tell you this. It was a question for me, how come when I go to Karbala for the first time in my life, I just look at Imam Hussein's shrine, but I can't do anything. Oh Hussein, all my life I've heard your musibah. All your life I've wept for you and cried for you and I've been in love with you, but now that I'm in front of you, I don't know what to do. Either I have to kill myself, or I have to just be quiet. You're dumbfounded. Some people, they'd go through that. These spiritual individuals, I've heard them say this, that when you go there, Lady Zainab doesn't let you get out of control. We wish that we could show how much we're upset about what happened to Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. One of those things that sometimes gets in the way is the love of Lady Zainab for Imam Hussein. We forget. When Lady Zainab's name comes up, we just remember those last moments when she was bidding him farewell. And it tears us up so much that we forget that she herself had two children that she lost on Ashura. And in the worst of ways. And she did that herself. They could have gone better, but just to be careful that Imam Hussein isn't upset, isn't hurt, doesn't lose some hope, she made sure that they go without even maybe hugging them goodbye. Brothers and sisters, think about it. You have a child with terminal illness, and that child is going to be gone in a few days. You're going to be with them as much as you can. You're going to stroke their head. You're going to hug them and kiss them as much as you can. You're going to spend as much time as you can. But Lady Zainab, she said, go, I'm not going to look at you. Why? Because ever since I was born, Imam Hussein was in these veins. She's born with the love of Hussein. They came to ask for her hand in marriage. She said, I have a condition. That's it. That's wherever Hussein goes, I go. And they say, Imam Ali looked at her, smiled. He said, he smiled at her. Yeah, I know what's going on. She says, I have this condition. Ali smiles. She knows what's coming. Her marriage happens with the love of Hussein. She puts a condition there. So you don't think her children will be born with the love of Hussein? How much these children love Lady Zainab? And how much they love their uncle Hussein? What do you think Lady Zainab has been teaching these kids all her life? The love of Hussein. If all of you were in Karbala, you would have given your children for Abu Abdullah. Lady Zainab, she doesn't want to give her children? You don't think she wants a share of the sacrifice? She calls her sons and says, go sacrifice yourselves for Hussein. Look at the wording, brothers and sisters. One is with Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, when he tells Ali al-Akbar to go. But when Ali al-Akbar is going, they say Imam Hussein holds his beard and puts his hand up to the sky that, oh Allah, this is a hard tragedy for me. But when Lady Zainab is sending her sons, you don't see anywhere that she says, oh Allah, I'm sending my sons. This is a hard tragedy for me. Give me patience. She says, go sacrifice yourself for Hussein. Finished. She's the one, they say, who fastens their belts. She's the one to put on their helmets. But these helmets are too big for these little kids. So she has to put cloth in these helmets and then put the helmet on their heads so the helmet doesn't fall over their eyes. She might be happy that, alhamdulillah, at least I don't have girls here. I have boys. They won't become prisoner. They will actually die for Hussein. Akbar went and was cut to pieces. Why shouldn't my children be cut to pieces? My children aren't any better. My children aren't any thirstier than Ali al-Akbar, who came back and couldn't breathe because he was so thirsty. Let them go. Don't bid me farewell in front of Hussein. I don't want him getting upset that I am getting upset because you're leaving. Go, don't turn back. Hussein is everything for me. Zainab is in love with Hussein. I won't even watch you from in the tent. I'll close the tent's door. I won't even know what's going on the battlefield. They went and fought. First Muhammad is killed, and then Aun is killed. Then Abu Abdullah picks up these bodies and he comes back to his sister. I have brought you back your children. You gave them to me safe and sound, but look at what they look like now. You gave them to me safe and healthy, now they're torn to pieces. Lady Zainab says, I gave you a gift, I will not take it back. As long as they've been sacrificed for you, that is enough for me. Some might say Zainab doesn't have any emotions. What is wrong with Zainab? Does she not have emotions? But Lady Zainab has all of the emotions that you can find. If you know why, do you know why? When Ali and Al-Akbar fell to the ground, this same Lady Zainab ran to the body of Ali and Al-Akbar among all of the enemies. Amal Fadlil Abbas has to protect Zainab as she goes to the side of Ali al-Akbar. Oh, son of my brother, what have they done to you? Only Allah knows what went through the heart of Zainab when she sent all of these two little ones. Lady Zainab, please give us a little bit of this love so we die for Abu Abdullah. Zainab bint Ali wants a share of the fight. She cannot just sit and watch, she also wants to sacrifice. But all she has are her two sons, Awn and Muhammad. They are only little ones. Oh Hussein, don't worry if they are torn to pieces. I promise no matter what that they will give their uncle their very best. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Al-Ali al-Azim. Wa sayalamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun.